Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Walk. I'm Father Roderick, and I'm walking in my neighborhood, but walking, I'm limping, and I have pain in my knees. There's a burning pain in my right foot, and all that has to do with what happened yesterday evening. I live on the upper floor of a building of the parish, of a rectory. Down the stairs part of the house is dedicated to the parish itself, the volunteers working there, and then the other part of the house is where we have our tridio spaces. And so the washing machine, the dryer, are also in the near the former kitchen, because the house, of course, it used to be a house for two priests, I think, and one aide when it was built. And so all that is downstairs. And every week I bring my laundry, my folded laundry, up in a crate, a plastic crate. I carry it up the stairs, and then I put it in my various drawers and closets and stuff. But yesterday, we had a big, busy day with, on Friday we always have the team meeting. So we have Martin and Inge. And we had to do a lot of stuff. There were just plenty of things that we needed to do. So I didn't have much time. And as a result, I remember carrying up the basket with the folded laundry and putting it quickly in the hallway. It's a very rectangular house. And I was like, I'll bring it to my sleeping room and I'll put the stuff in the drawers later on. But I don't have time right now. Go downstairs again. We have our meeting and everything. And then at the end of the day, I'm just sitting in my study room upstairs, watching a bit of TV. And then it's dark outside, and I want to go to bed. I'm already in my pajamas. And when I leave the study room, there is no button for the lights. And you can probably tell where this is going. The house is old, and so it's been constructed when the entire layout of the rooms was different. So there's no on and off switch for the lights near the room that I left. So I turn off the light in my study room, and the lights in the hallway were off. I always turn off the lights when I'm not in a certain space because, well, saving energy, etc. And so I walk 2-3 steps, and then my right foot just crashes into that crate full of laundry. It's a pretty heavy crate, and I fall forward, and I land with my right knee on the crate, my other knee on the floor. I use my hands to kind of break my fall, and I don't know if it's a reflex or if it's a like old muscle memory from the time that I was still in martial arts classes when I was a child, not recently. One of the first things they teach you is how to fall. You never, don't stretch out your arms because you'll break them. So you always have to kind of like fall sideways or kind of move your body a little bit so you fall as graciously as is possible. So anyway, I land on the floor and everything hurts. And, I stand up and it's like, turn on the lights, go to the kitchen, and both my knees are bleeding, especially my right knee that hit the crate. And my right toe is broken. Well, not the toe, but the toenail is broken. There's blood coming out. There is a wound on the top of my foot. There is another small toe of the left foot that is bleeding. And, everything hurts. And so, disinfected the wounds, put on the bandages, put some socks over my feet, and I go to bed. I'm so tired. And, man... And this morning, that's when you really feel that it hurts. It's funny that when you're in a situation like that, it's pure adrenaline. It must be kind of a fight or flight type of energy. That's, by the way, I think also what makes people curse, you know, and something like that. It's not because you're a bad person, but I think it's kind of a reaction to the danger that you're in, and so it gives you energy. And well, when people fight or whatever, they grunt, they make noise. It's kind of in our genes. So anyway, this morning, I still wanted to go out for a walk because I got some stuff to tell you and to share with you, but it is I'm limping. Oh well. And certainly one of the frustrating things is that I wanted to run. I wanted to go for a long run, but especially when the toenail is broken, it's not a wise thing to do. That needs to heal first, otherwise it gets infected when you're running, because you know the sweat and everything. So I'll just have to take it easy this week. Oh boy. Well, but the reason I wanted to go for a walk anyway, I got a lot of things to share with you. It is the weekend of Pentecost that I'm recording this. You may be listening to it a little bit later. And this has been a quite interesting way, let's put it mildly, a week during which I've learned a lot. Let's put a positive spin on that. First of all, it was a busy week because we're still working on the Star Wars documentary. And since that is one of the most challenging documentaries that we wanted to do, it requires a lot of work every week for me. That's not how I want to continue, because in the future, the plan is for me to do most of my contribution during the first week that we're editing this thing, and then the editor can do it by himself. But right now, we're just composing the story as we go, which, of course, is a much more laborious process. So I've been writing voiceovers, helping with the editing, meetings. Because we're still figuring out the workflow. And once we know how we can do this more efficiently, even my editor tells me, I'm getting faster, I'm getting the hang of this. And it's not that he hasn't got a ton of experience, because he has. But we're starting to, you know, get a good click as to, you know, how do we approach these particular projects. And we still have a lot to do in the near future. But it's fun. It's coming together, and the reactions are very positive. And what I hope for is happening, is that you've got the first initial interest when you post something on social media. Ow, my right foot. But that kind of dies down very quickly. And it's not nowadays, especially with all these algorithms, and when it comes to Facebook, it's even like algorithms where you have to pay to play. It's really hard to get a lot of organic reach at first. But what I see on YouTube, and that's one of the encouraging things, is that these episodes continue to gather viewers week after week. And that's always been why I wanted to invest in video. Is that once you make something that is timeless, and this documentary is relatively timeless, it's a one-time investment, and over the years you can reap the benefits. And we've seen that with the Lego productions as well. Those are very tiny, small projects, but every year we've got a couple of thousand new viewers, and more people that start to share that, and so you get that kind of snowball effect. That's a real big, massive advantage over, let's say, a medium like podcasting, where it's much more, it's here today, it's gone tomorrow, at least in the mind of people. It's really hard to discover older content, unless it is extremely focused, unless you make episodes about one specific topic that is, in a way, also timeless. Like, for instance, I listened to a couple of movie review podcasts, and the ones that I never listen back to are the ones that mix up everything, where every episode is about five or six movies. But if it's just one movie, one review, then yeah, I may actually listen to a review from 2-3 years ago. But in general, podcasting is a little bit more kind of has more in common with news, and you know, who wants to go back and read the news from last week? So I'm happy with that. So that was a lot of work. Then the second thing is we were working on a project for a third party who had asked us to film 3 videos about projects in the Netherlands. Projects for people in difficult situations, and the 3 projects have been nominated for a prize, an encouragement prize, and those videos needed to highlight those 3 particular projects so that people could vote. And so, very, very interesting work to do, and something that I've done in the past as well. But there was one problem, and it's been a problem for many, many weeks, is that they never asked us if we could do this. They published that we would do this. They said, Father Roderick is coming to visit those projects and we'll produce a video and then everybody can vote. I had to read that in the news. And I was like, oh? But wait a minute, that's like in the middle of my springtime holiday. Well, we need to get together and come up with a good plan for that. And then again, they send us a plan, like this is when we need the videos. But that's very unilateral. They never asked us if that was feasible, if we could do that, if we agreed to do that. They just assumed, based on things that we did in the past, that we would jump on that and just do what we did in the past. Well, things have changed on our part. We are producing, I'd say, at least 5 or 6 times as many episodes for both TV and for Tridio than last year. Our entire organization is revolutionary different. We have a full-time office manager, producer. That's what you hear is my watch, actually. Got a smart watch, tick watch, Mobvoi. It's a Chinese brand. It's very, very affordable Android watcher nowadays. It's called Wear OS, and it's currently monitoring my walk. And every kilometer, it's telling me that I limp and that I'm slow. Anyway, we now work, we have a very tight workflow in a sense that since we are doing these weekly episodes of the documentaries, those need to be subtitled. I have a lot of extra work on that. We're planning ahead months in advance already because we're producing so much. And so we are not as flexible as we used to be, where we could just, well, we have nothing to do anyway, so yeah, we'll just spend the next 5 weeks filming and editing, etc. No, we can't do that anymore. And so we insisted right from the beginning, well, we need a contract. We need to, you know, it's not enough to tell us unilaterally that we're going to do that. By the way, it would be nice to not publicize that before you have an agreement with us. So that was weird. And then we said, we want to have a written agreement. Also, because there are a lot of things that you guys are asking, and we want to avoid that there are expectations that we can't meet. It's not because we don't want to or whatever, but just because of our planning and our other work, we want to know what we're saying yes or no to. And then it just took weeks and weeks, and still no contract. We continued to communicate with them, and we started. We were like, "Oh, we still don't have a project, but okay, we'll start to film anyway," because there was a wow. This tree is covered in. In what looks like I know what this is. Looks like cobwebs, but there are millions of tiny little black eggs in those cobwebs, and there are actually small yellow worms, or well, coming out of it. And these guys are going to eat this entire tree. And if they're not careful, they're going to eat all the other trees here. Oh, gosh, I'm going to be... I'm going to stay away from that. Let's walk underneath that branch. That part... There's a little wooden bridge there, but it's fenced off because the wood has started to rot. This is the little swamp area. And so it's... I noticed the other week when I was running there that part of the pillars or the wooden poles on which the whole thing rests were starting to give away. So they probably finally fenced it off. So anyway, we continue to ask for this written agreement, and at the same time, that because they gave us such a tight deadline, and we had the holiday also, like 2 weeks that I wouldn't be available because of other work. And so we still went ahead and filmed. Also there, we arrived there and, you know, on paper, interesting projects. But the first project that we filmed, this guy was like, okay, welcome. And he welcomed us in an industrial part of the town in a white, bright office building. And he's like, okay, so we're going to do an interview? No, we need to tell a story. And nothing was prepared. There was nothing visual. So we spend so much extra energy in... Oh, this part is not fenced off, so I can go down the stairs here. Ow, ow, ow. Walking down the stairs is not a good idea when your knees are hurting. Ouch. Okay, so here's this fence. This is... someone knocked it over. It wasn't me, by the way. But I'll turn left, and I'm walking on the wood. And this feels more solid than the other part. Some yellow flowers here, and the rest is, it really feels like a swamp always. The water is kind of gray and murky. It doesn't look very appealing. And no ducks here. So, the whole setting, we kind of was like, man, this is not a very visual project. And so what are we going to do? We spent our best energy, a lot of creativity in that. Second project that we filmed, same problem. We arrived there. At least that was an interview outside. And then it turned out that there's no examples. You just have the person who is in charge telling us about what they do for other people. But what you want to show is what it does to people. That's giving the emotional impact and the relevance. Well, ultimately, turns out there's one... person that they asked to come over and talk, but because of a personal tragedy, that person doesn't want to give us an interview. And I mean, it's all understandable, but we are there, and there is really, what are we going to do? How are we going to tell this story? Again, another day where we have to really turn all the dials to 200% in order to make something. And then the third project was this week, where finally it's a project where with someone who is very good at telling what she does and why she does it, and it's a very visual, cheerful, colorful situation, and so much. I mean, that was the ideal project to film. And so I'm super excited and happy and with the result and everything. And then we get this email exchange and phone exchange where, you know, kind of worst case scenario, because there is no written contract, because the expectations are still at the same level as they were when they kind of announced the world that we were going to do this. And we have been contacting them and telling them, well, you know what, it's problematic. Because, for instance, this last project, we could only film that on Thursday. Because last Thursday was Ascension Day. And they wanted us, they demanded us to film that particular day. And then the deadline was, We already had asked once for a delay. It was like, this is impossible. You set a deadline. You didn't consult with us. We had no agreement. And we cannot. How are we going to do this when Father Roderick is not available? So they gave us a few days extra, which just a few days. And then we called someone else again. We asked, we explained, well, we can't film on Ascension Day. You want us to film that particular day. We've also offered alternatives. So, you know, if we film today and the deadline is tomorrow, we need some extra time. Oh, yeah, that's fine. But apparently, there was no internal communication. And so it turns out that they, unbeknownst to us, also had a deadline. There would be a mailing going out to thousands of people that those videos would be available and that people could vote starting Monday. And now they're like, oh, you are not keeping your deadline and now we're in trouble and this whole, oh, drama. And also a very kind of, you know, like we get all the blame. And it's, they send around an email to multiple people, like, yeah, you're doing good work, but we can never count on you. And this is the third time that this happens, and you don't keep your. And you know what? The last times that we did this with this third party was kind of the same problem. There was no written contract. There was a none of clarity, and the internal communication in that organization was also kind of not ideal. Let's put it mildly. And I have someone who did the first batch of videos, and he got the same criticism. And I know for a fact that that is a person who is very professional, always delivers. It's impossible to get mad at him. And yet he got exactly the same problem. So that those are usually telltale signs that there may be something wrong on the other side of the of the conversation. But it's frustrating, and the most frustrating thing is now that we are working on a certain level of professional production, we know from experience that you need to be ultra clear right from the get-go. What do the both parties expect, and what can they truly deliver, and is there an agreement about the procedure, the end result, the deadline, and the remuneration? That's another thing. We have no indication whatsoever that what they're going to pay will cover our costs. And it's so complicated. The lesson learned is, and so I had to get help, because I'm like, man, I cannot possibly deliver those videos next week. We still don't have a contract. I think that any other company would say, well, there's no contract, so there's not going to be a product. We now have to take all the risk ourselves. And so I hired someone to put those videos together, which will cost us way too much money. And we don't even know if we make it back, because we've already put 3 full days in this, plus the preparation, plus all the headache. Man, and then I get to the point where I'm thinking, is this what, am I living the dream? You know, the filming and telling the stories and asking, trying to find or create awareness for these beautiful projects, because they're really great projects. That is absolutely my dream. That's what I want to do. That's what I think is super useful. But do I have to do that in conjunction with third parties that just don't really match our way of working? Even if something in itself is a good thing, if the context of that work is not good and is only frustrating both parties, then maybe a point where you decide not to continue or not to do this in the future. That's going to be a a moment of discernment for us, and also for the other party, because I want to have a talk. I want to make very clear that we are not to blame for this, and we have been right from the get-go asking for a written confirmation for a reasonable time to do this project and for a reasonable remuneration. Anyway, so that was all the drama going on this week on that level. And then there was another thing happening, which is by the time that you're listening to this, will be public knowledge. It currently isn't. We still have gotta cross the road here. We still have an embargo until the feast of the Pentecost. But again, you're listening to this when it's already public knowledge. But there's a massive change happening in my life and in the life of the parishes. Our pastor, and I think I've already told you this because this is already known everywhere, is going to be moved to another city. Now, he moves from the city of Amersfoort, where he's been a pastor for 10 years, to the city of Arnhem, which is a big city, even bigger than Amersfoort. And, we have a very, very small amount of active priests in our diocese. And so we've heard that the diocese has decided to not replace this priest, and instead to merge the pastoral team of our parish with our neighboring parish, which covers a tremendous amount of towns and villages, where there is one priest, one pastor. He's originally from Poland, and he works in our country as a missionary, you could say. A great guy, absolutely great. Very wise man, but also very spiritual, and I couldn't be more excited to have a colleague like that. And there is a young priest who's just been appointed there. He's been ordained a couple of months ago, and at first he was working half-time in that parish because it's his first parish, and he's from Colombia. He's also a missionary. He came here with a community. They were three or four, I think. All the others have abandoned their vocation. They returned home, and he's the only one who stayed and who said, "I want to be here. This, I feel that God calls me to be here." So amazing to see that, and despite all the, you know, the discouragement of no longer being able to live in that community. And there was a lot going on in the community as a whole as well. But he decided to stay. He's now incarnated in our diocese. And so he was working half-time there. And half-time, he had been asked to take the lead in youth pastoral because the Brazilian community that was in charge of that had been sent back by our government, because our laws have changed, and they didn't get a working permit anymore. There was a small lay community with one priest. They were doing tremendous work, and our diocese was like, okay, we'll just put this other guy from South America on that. These South Americans seem to be good at this. And he is. But now, because of the change, they have changed his nomination, and so instead of working half-time in youth pastoral, he's now going to work full-time in our both of our parishes, because the parishes will stay independent for now. The pastoral team is now merged, so we have two priests full time and one assistant priest. That would be me. We have a couple of lay people and a few permanent deacons, but that are not they're not on payroll. So I think we have one, or do we have, we'll have two permanent deacons, but well, they have family life as well, so they don't have the same availability as the full-timers. But the thing is, the area is vast. It is massive. There are villages now that are part of this bigger, you know, fusion of two parishes, where it takes about an hour by car to go from one church to another. That other parish has not closed any. Well, they may have closed a few churches, but it's mostly villages where, you know, the church is the only church. So it's different from a parish. And so I think they have about 15 churches. And we've still got 5 where every Sunday there is something going on. We have 4 because we used to be 2 priests. We had 4 parishes that would have the Eucharist almost on a weekly basis. All that is going to change because they're just going to leave me here as an assistant. Those other 2 priests had to cater to 15 churches in a vast area. Of course, I will be asked also to sometimes celebrate in those parishes, but it's going to mean that we have way too many churches. That would be like 20 churches with just 3 priests. I don't know what to think about that, other than things are going to change. For me, because our bishop also asks that at least in both of those parishes, there's at least 1 church where there's Mass every Sunday, where you have access to the sacraments, and those are called Eucharistic centers. And I think that's a smart move to have at least 1 central church. This is also kind of like, we don't know what the future will bring, but there is a chance that at least those churches will remain, and the other churches, it's trickier. So it's going to mean also that if you want to celebrate, if there needs to be a Mass every Sunday in those 2 churches, will probably also mean that I will have to be more available. I don't know. At least also for the solemnities, etc. Which up until now, my pastor used to celebrate. So it may change my availability during the week. And then it will also, in the long run, definitely mean that we'll have to close a couple of those churches. It's impossible. And if you don't want to have a situation where you have a Catholic church and parishioners and they only have Mass like every 4 weeks, once every 6 weeks, there are places in our diocese where that's the case. And if you don't have the celebration of the Eucharist, even though you may have lots of volunteers and lay services, etc., but if the Eucharist is no longer the beating heart of your community, it is going to fall asleep. And ultimately, it will die. And that's what we've seen time and again. So we need to guarantee that the Eucharist is kind of it's the pumping heart of our parochial life. Of course, that's not the only thing, but that's where it starts. You know, you can't run a marathon if you don't eat. Same thing with parish work. But it also means that, you know, we can't only be in one place at a time. And we can celebrate 2 Masses on Sunday. We may have to move some parishes to Saturday evening so that we will have the Vigil Mass. That will allow us to at least give some of these places access to the Eucharist with a reasonable frequency. And then we'll just have to close buildings. And that's going to be a very painful, difficult process, as it always is, because especially in villages, people grew up in that church, and it's much more than just a house of worship. It's part of their identity. And so that tells me that the next couple of years are going to require an incredible emotional investment. And usually what happens then is that if you are in situations of change, all the energy goes to the process of changing, but not necessarily to renewal. And I'm more of the position that if you know that certain changes are inevitable, change quickly. Make fast decisions. Don't nurture false hope. But then you want to make changes quickly because it liberates energy and creativity for the new situation where you want to build and you want to create. So if I think about the last 2 years and how much has changed in my life and in the work that we do with Tridio, it is because we have made a very decisive decisive decision. We made a quick decision. At one point, I just felt it's impossible for me to run two organizations, to do both all the podcasting the way I used to do it for the past 15 years, and then also build up this platform for video production and realize my dream, which is to film documentaries all over the world and reach a world, target a worldwide audience, tell the stories that I love to tell and that are really making a difference. Something had to go, and I had to be, and it was painful, and it was relatively quick, but I wouldn't have done it differently after now that I'm here, and I see how much energy that has liberated for me to do, to truly pursue my dream. When I started to do podcasting, and I formulated this, I think I even had like a dreamy episode where I imagined to be in the year 2015 and then depicting what my life would look like. And you know what? That dream came true. I am now doing exactly what I told myself I would do at the age of 50. And the organization is where I wanted it to be at the age of 50. But it is because in the steps leading toward this, I made decisions, difficult decisions, to change and to change quickly. And if something doesn't work, throw it away and try something else until it sticks to the wall. That's the way to go nowadays. You don't have the luxury, the resources, and the time to try everything. You need focus. And so that is a big lesson learned. That's also why, you know, after a week like this where we noticed that for the third time in a row, it turns out to be very difficult to come to a good collaboration between our organization and another organization. You know, I'm kind of thinking, unless something radically changes, let's not do this anymore. You know, we don't have time for this. We have other things to do. And every energy that we put into solving problems that are unnecessary, you know, if this collaboration is not essential to our mission, and I don't think it is, then don't do it. Go and put your energy elsewhere. And especially if something in your life, in my life, in your work, generates a constant stream of negative energy and frustration, it's usually a sign that that's not what you're supposed to do. And it's not the way you're supposed to do it. So, for me, that became clear. Okay, this doesn't work. Let's not do this anymore. We'll still do our best to deliver what we've been asked to do. But then it's over, you know. unless something changes. You can never exclude that people learn from certain things that go wrong. And that together we can diagnose that and solve it. But for now, I'm thinking I'm not going to continue in this way. That would be very unwise. So anyway, quick decisions, quick changes. Same is true with this parish situation. My life will change. It will also mean more flexibility of the priests. But then I'm also going to be a very, very clear about what I find acceptable. And a number of things will need to change. Like, there's still a habit, a tradition of in many of these churches to make their own liturgy booklets and to have to always involve, which in its core it's very positive. They want to involve the priest or whoever is leading the liturgy. So they send you the kind of the concept, and then you have to. It's not always good. We cannot afford to do that anymore. I would say just go back to the simplicity of the liturgy. You don't have to invent it every time. Say the black and do the red. That is a very wise, this refers to the liturgical books that we're using, where in red, there's a description of what the priest should do and what the acolytes, etc., would do. And then there's the black, and those are the prayers and the texts that you read. And those are actually the prescribed texts and the prescribed actions for liturgy. And so there's this And this is from last century in the 70s, where, you know, in order to involve people more in the process of celebrating the liturgy, they had this kind of open forum where everybody could contribute and people would write their own prayers, and some of that is still there. Well, we can't do that anymore. And also, there are still a lot of differences in between the various churches in the kind of basic liturgical rules. And I've always been a very big opponent of that. That's not the diversity you want to have. I'm very much in favor of diversity when it comes to creativity, but not when it comes to the rules. You can't have one village where you can totally, you know, when there's a red light, you can still cross the road, and in another parish, you can only cross the road when the lights are green. That's because of the simplicity, and it will make it much easier to go from church to church, and also for parishioners to be able to feel welcome in another parish. Nothing is more frustrating than you are in a church, and then all of a sudden, it's like, what? That's not how the force works. That's not how the liturgy works. It makes you an outsider. It breaks the communion that you want to have. So, and in the past, I had the problem that I could be very clear about that. But if you have colleagues that are reversing, changing the rules again, or bending the rules, and you have no authority, I still don't have authority. I'm just an assistant priest. And that is super frustrating. And so, again, in the future, situation changes. Let's be very clear. Now, let's write things down. If you don't write things down, then there are going to be expectations that you can't meet. And if there are expectations and you don't meet them, that's a cause for frustration and for anger and for... You don't want that negative energy. So clarity, simplicity, and the ability to make quick decisions and focus on what is truly essential. Those are general rules for any situation, for your personal life, for your work, but also in the life of the church. And that's hopefully something that will materialize. And in a way, I'm kind of glad that I'm a bit older now. So I have more experience with changing situations, and I know what works and I know what doesn't work. And I'm a little bit more assertive than I used to be, so that all helps. Well, that was what I wanted to share with you. I'm limping a little bit less, so walking is good. I'm kind of pacing back and forth in front of I'm in an industrial area. You may hear this. There's a Seats and Sofas big store where you can buy couches, and here is a do-it-yourself warehouse, and I need to get some material to fix something upstairs. So I'll just go in and do some shopping, and then I'll walk home back. I'll limp home back again. Again, this is a time of change. It's the weekend of Pentecost that I'm recording this. The Holy Spirit is all about change, but it's also all about courage. And the Holy Spirit guides and makes things clear and translates and illuminates. That's what I hope will happen in your life, and it's something that I count on in my own life for all the things that are changing. But they're changing for the best, I hope. And so please say a prayer for my country, where there are so many parishes in this situation and so few vocations, or at least people that respond to their vocation. And of course, you are also always in my prayers. Next week, we'll talk a lot about Star Wars, probably, because there's a new Han Solo movie. I'm going to the premiere. And I've also made some final decisions on my podcast and how I'm going to continue that. And something tells me that you're going to like it. So stay tuned. Keep following me on Facebook, Twitter, and on the website tridio.com, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/tridiomedia. I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Have a wonderful Feast of Pentecost, or Solemnity of the Pentecost. May the Holy Spirit guide you and give you energy and courage. And we'll talk soon. God bless.